You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring body wash and bar soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
I'm Peanut Tillman, and this is the NFL Players Second Acts podcast. And I got my pastor with me, Roman Harper. What's up, Rome?
What's up, baby? And I want to tell all of our listeners out there and viewers, please give us, click that button, like, give us a 5-star rating, hit subscription to, and tell a friend to tell a friend to tell a friend. Anywhere you listen to your podcast, whether it's Apple Podcasts or iHeart, please give us a like and a review.
Hey, one of our guests was Fred Taylor. Dope interview. Give it a listen. We got a good guest. Read y'all some of these highlights real quick. First round pick in 98 draft, number 9 overall. That's a lottery pick.
Yeah.
That's a good one. 13-year NFL vet. He was running back. 17th on the all-time rushing list. Got 11,695 yards. Jaguars all-time leading rusher. He's in the Jaguars Ring of Honor. My guy, my good friend, Fred Taylor. What's up, boss?
What's up, man? What's up? What's up? Listen.
That's a distance, every,
that was dope. That was a great open. I appreciate it. Thank you for reading off. The only disagreement, you said it's an oldie. But goody, I get offended by that word, old. I'm very sensitive to that word.
Well, I apologize.
You know, because what do you do with old stuff? You throw it out, right?
No, you not necessarily. You drink old wine.
So you should call them an antique.
But it's not necessarily old wine. Okay. Like it's vintage, maybe.
Okay.
Or seasoned.
I apologize.
You know what I'm saying?
Much better.
I apologize. I will, when this is all over and done, I'm gonna redo that intro and I'm gonna say,
oh, no, I'm just messing.
We got an antique over here. Is antique good?
Season.
Antiques. Well, antiques are kind of like part of my career. You know, they call me Fragile Fred for, we can get into that. Antiques, when I think antiques, I think it's easily broken.
Okay.
It's true,
you know,
too.
You know what I'm saying? So I don't know if I like that even. That might be worse.
Well, if we're talking about broken, what have you broken? I mean, you would tell back. You are a legend in Jacksonville. What have you broken? What was like one of the best shots you took or best shots you dished out?
Oh, man, it was a ton of them. But you know what? I can say playing against our hated rival, still to this day, I believe they might not consider it so much as a rival because we're on the way on the bottom end in terms of wins against them. Mm-hmm. in order for it to be a rival, it has to be some back and forth.
You got back and forth. And you got what team is that?
The Titans.
Tennessee Titans.
Tennessee Titans. I believe it was in the year 9/11 happened. And just a simple zone left play. I did a crazy jump cut back to the right in traffic on Blaine Bishop. Mm-hmm. And I tore my groin off the bone right there on the spot in that play. And it hurt so bad, I grabbed my leg. I tossed the ball and I grabbed my groin. So I threw the ball to my close friend, Samari Rowe. So my coach thought I was probably point shaving because the night before, he was like, you and Samari, y'all shouldn't be playing those video games. We were at Samari's house playing Madden. And Coach Coughlin gave me a warning for fraternizing with the opponent that he didn't play that. But that was my friend from childhood. So I tossed Samari the ball and I just was, you know, down on the ground in agonizing pain. The worst pain I ever felt, you know, my entire career. Because usually if you have chronic groin, the procedure is they go in there and they snip it.
No doubt.
Right? And then they let it scar and heal and all of that. But I did that on the field with no anesthesia. Ooh. So I never broke anything per se. I had a ton of injuries, but that was the worst.
And you had clavicle issues, a couple labrums. Like, you've done a lot to your body. I want to talk less about the injuries and more, because I remember playing against you. But I want to talk more about the Tom Coughlin, I would say, what you would hear about outside of the building. I was never in the building with him. Yeah. You had to be there a couple minutes early. Like, these are real hardcore rules that I've heard are legendary.
Old school.
Yeah.
Right. Certainly old school. They wouldn't fly today. For example, they didn't necessarily fly with Jalen Ramsey and a few other of the younger guys that were in the building when TC came back around. But I can say this before I get into a few stories. In terms of developing, you know, boys to men and being appreciative of that, I think players would appreciate that more, you know, as they get older.
Right.
Because that's all he wanted. Mm-hmm. He wants you to come in and understand and learn how to be a man and approach this game as a business, which is what it is. And when you carve the fat off, he wanted to make sure you were extremely focused on your job. And so he tried to make sure you just carved off all the distractions and any things that was going to hinder your, you know, your push, you know, to try and be successful as an individual and as a team collectively. But yeah, all of those stories are true.
Okay.
You know, even before I got there, I arrived in 98. They had a few camps a few years before I got there. So they started in 96. TC, they spoke about the 3-a-days, you know, spoke about double padded practices, spoke about the breaks that you were supposed to have. He would take those away and just make you no naps, a whole lot of stuff. We had a concentration line where you entered the field. You couldn't step on the white line. You have to turn around and go do it again.
All the little stuff.
Yeah, it's all the little stuff, right? But he really tried to create this sense of awareness and extreme focus.
Did anybody ever quit? Like, that was because it's all.
I mean, this is a lot.
This is a whole lot.
No, it's a lot, but I don't recall, at least not in my time.
Okay.
He coached me for 5 years. So in my time, I never had anybody that quit. I had a few guys close on the brink. hell, I was one of them. but just some crazy stuff. Let me say this. So it is true, being punctual, he didn't mess around. He had his own TC time. You know, meetings was at 8. You had to be there 7:50 or so, or you would get fined. And he fined you for everything. Two outrageous quick stories. I remember Marlos Leroy, he played at Georgia, young defensive lineman. He placed a bet with Keenan McCardell back in the day. Keenan was an older vet, always clean, the nicest suits on the teams.
Great wide receiver.
A great wide receiver and a great coach now as well. Mm-hmm. Keenan bet Marlos that Florida would beat Georgia in the Florida-Georgia game. And if Florida won, he would have to let Keenan pick out a suit for Keenan would pick out a suit for Marlo's. So Keenan picked out this the brightest orange suit for Marlo's to travel with for game day. Coach Coughlin saw that guy on the plane, fined him like 10 grand because he didn't have on our team, you know, business type travel. He had on a bright orange suit, so TC didn't play that. And the other story is Tavian Banks and Cordell Taylor. We had a Saturday night team meeting, and they were driving across this bridge in Jacksonville, Main Street Bridge. And there's slippery grating on a bridge. So if you if it's raining and you brake the wrong way or too fast, your car's lose control. Uh-huh. Those guys lost control. The front of the car was on top of the bridge, almost was gonna go into the St. John's River.
Right.
Glass, the windshield broke out. Those guys were all cut up. They got fined for being late to the team meeting.
He don't play.
These are the legendary stories. I was that's why I had to ask.
I've heard a couple of them.
I've heard them.
These were like, these guys almost lost their lives. They didn't show up. They didn't make the 8 o'clock Saturday night, the day before the game team meeting. They both were fined conduct detrimental. Because the they shouldn't have been rushing. They were going to be late anyway, is what he said.
Oh, I think I'm peeling that one. I'm taking that
but
one.
But he learned. The game is about adaptation and adjusting. He leaves Jacksonville, goes to New York. A lot of savvy vets in that locker room, starting with Stray and those guys. He learned that he needed to pipe down a little bit. He changed his approach, and he was able to really get the attention of those guys and went on and win two Super Bowls. Yeah.
Fred T, you know, Peanut read off all your accolades, talked about all the yards, 17th all time. You've been a Hall of Fame semifinalist the last couple years.
Yeah.
How does that feel, first of all, to be mentioned with all of the greats, but then also coming up short?
Right.
Like, how does that, what, at what point do you almost reach this to, like, am I just done, this point of frustration? Let me know, like, how does that feel? I haven't got my name. I don't even care, but I want to know how you feel.
I'm appreciative, right, that I'm even considered. And just starting right there, it's a lot of great players, man, and a lot of guys that have done amazing things. So each year that I'm back up, I'm like, all right, this is an opportunity. You know, if nothing else, it is an opportunity. I would love that moment when we're able to get in the finalist room. So then they're able to do a deeper dive into, you know, my achievements, the things I've done. And really being able to compare those to the other guys that are already in the Hall of Fame, whatever those criterias are, being able to stack them up. You know, unfortunately, I never had the best timing throughout my career in terms of putting together back-to-back yearly campaigns, which would have got my name considered in more Pro Bowl talks.
Yeah.
You know, I had numbers. You know, but they weren't back to back to back like some of these guys. But I had years where I outrushed the best backs from the previous year, so forth and so on. Even starting with my rookie year, more than the Hall of Fame talks. I think in the class of 98, myself, Peyton Manning, Randy Moss.
That's a good class.
And when you look at the final tally of the Rookie of the Year voting, I believe there's a better argument for my case for Rookie of the Year than Randy won it than my argument for the Hall of Fame. But I was trapped in a smaller market.
Correct.
You know, Randy had certain attentions on him coming in.
1,000%.
Right. And he had two great games the rookie year, Green Bay and Dallas. And if you have amazing games against those, typically the media is going to tilt toward that way a bit more, as opposed to looking at my body of work, my rookie year, in terms of touchdowns, overall numbers. So I go back there probably a little bit more disappointed about that than the Hall of Fame, because a lot of those young guys, they come in with the mindset, hey, I want to be a Hall of Famer. You know, and,
really?
And I think that if I had thought that way coming in, as opposed to just being excited to be drafted to the NFL and just being able to compete each Sunday, I think if I had that mindset, I would have done things a bit differently. It would have created a certain structure, you know, but I never thought that.
Tell me two things that you think you would have done differently. I love
just
that.
Preparation.
Because I was like you. I was just happy to get my name called.
Right, right. But more for me, just looking back, preparation, you know, taking care of my body a bit more, understanding that my body is the one thing that's gonna make or break me. Beforehand, I never considered taking care of my body. I didn't think about nutrition.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't put health first. Mm. You know, if I felt, you know, a toe or something that was hurting, I'm still gonna go to Miami and hang out, you know, and go in the off season, yeah, go with my, you know, go hang out with my people and my buddies and just ready to get away from the season, as opposed to doing the little things,
yeah,
you know, to achieve the end goal.
Right.
So I never had a end goal. Yeah, I wanted to win. I wanted to win the Super Bowl. But in terms of the big, the highest achievement from an individual standpoint, although team success is added,
right.
But from an individual standpoint would be, you know, Canton. And I just never had that thought process in place until later in my career. I was like, oh, this is attainable.
Yeah.
You know, when they started talking about the 10,000 yard rushing, right, club, when I became the 21st running back to do it in the history of the league,
that's,
I was
big,
like, all right, this is, let's go. This is attainable. And then Jim Brown, you know, putting his numbers, you know, in my sights, said, this is the guy I idolized the most in this game. I want to outdo his numbers.
Yeah.
You know, unfortunately, my last 2 years didn't go the way I wanted them to in New England, but I thought it would have helped. But again, if you set your bar high, you know, even if you fall just under it, you know, you've gotten really close. And I just never set my bar high enough. So those talks, man, I'm appreciative of them. God's timing is the best, you know, when it happens, you know, it'll be a good moment. And I think it can happen. You know, I think it will happen.
My
teammate Tony Boselli
just got
inducted after so many years. But the guys I've played against, the old school guys that have played my position, that have mentioned certain things about my career and my style of play while I was playing, and even now that I'm done, those guys that are Hall of Famers, the fact that when I retired and even now, my numbers are better than half of the backs that are in the Hall of Fame.
No doubt.
Still. So I think I have some argument there. So when it happens, it'll be a good moment.
But your former teammate, though, Tony Boselli, he spoke about that, though. He was like, I think Fred is probably one of the most underrated backs out there. And I don't think that people, I don't think that people talk enough about you and your stats. Like, do you feel underappreciated?
Not underappreciated. Because the numbers are what they are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can line them up against some of the best. Again, of the 100, you know, years or so that, you know, this league has been around, there have been thousands of running backs that have played, or guys that have played the running back position. And when I was done, I was 15th all the time.
Yeah.
You know, I'm somewhere, I mean, we're talking about 1% or you know, half that. So, I mean, I know I had a very good career. I missed out on those things. I missed out on some of the hardware, you know, that sticky Lombardi. Maybe a few other Pro Bowls do too.
I missed out on it too.
Certain marketing and I know. I deal with this with Ryan Clark all the time. But
trust me,
it's such an honor.
I deal with it all the time with Rome. He's always throwing shade my way because I lost 2 Super Bowls and he won one. Like he's always, he's constantly just throwing it. I'm just saying.
I get it. So yeah, we certainly get it. So it's a prestigious class, you know, to be a part of, man.
It's a jerk move.
And congrats, right?
Don't congratulate him. Don't do that.
So yeah,
it's about you.
But it was great to hear Tony take away from or to add that to his Hall of Fame speech. It just shows what he thinks of me.
Yeah.
And that's what it's about, right? Yeah. What my peers and the guys I lined up against every Sunday, you talk to Ray Lewis, Ed Reed, those guys who led the Ravens defense, that old AFC Central, they know what I brought to the table. I brought them work. Pittsburgh Steelers, they know what I brought to the 100%. Table. Work. I mean, so it's so many other guys that are in the Hall of Fame, defensive greats, Derek Brooks, Warren Sapp, just Troy Polamalu. So when they go out and they say, we wanted to stop him first, that's how we stopped Jacksonville, you know. And then there are moments where they would consider me the first or second best player in team history behind, it's either me or Tony. That speaks volumes.
I kind of feel like once you make the Hall of Fame, you should get a Hall of, you, the Hall of Famer, should get a vote. I don't necessarily like the fact that it's always left up to the media to vote the player in.
That's almost considered like the Heisman.
Yeah, because they all get a vote. I was talking to Robert Griffin, RG3. I was talking to Robert about that, and he was like, oh, yeah, I still get my vote. And I think it's dope because no disrespect to people in the media, but you haven't played that game. You don't really know all of what these players go through or what it takes to get to that level. And then if you look at recent years, I feel like certain players, like Hall of Famers, get mad when some Hall of Famers is like, well, what did he do? You know what I'm saying? So I kind of, you know, leave it to the greats, the Yellow Jackets, to see who you want or see who they want in their club.
Like the hard part is, you know, how do you identify what the criteria are?
Mm-hmm.
You know, if there were a certain set of guidelines, then it would probably make it a little bit easier, because if it's Pro Bowls, then what do you do now in this era?
Right.
When the Pro Bowl game is, you know, let touch and
it's all that. Yeah.
And even then, you know, even back then, you know, guys don't attend the Pro Bowl, but it's still on their book. Then you got alternates that come in, and then now that's considered a Pro Bowl and all these different things. But what's the high criteria? And it's so much inconsistency.
Correct.
And it becomes opinionated by these guys who consider themselves historians of the game or teachers, or is it statistics? Like, so what is it? So
and then there's
I can't
it's
control
their, it's their
that.
Bias though too, though, because I personally think that T.O. should have made it. T.O. should have been a first ballot guy or second, at least second ballot.
So it's all the politics behind it.
For sure. And it shouldn't be though. That's the frustrating
Typically,
part about
the
it.
Typically politics
though.
Are only involved if you're not a first ballot.
Correct.
But T.O. should have been a first ballot, then he doesn't have to do the campaign trail and letters of recommendations and all of that stuff.
There was a lot that went into it. Fred T, man, you talked about your peers, how much they respected you. And I'll just flat out be honest. You were the first Jacksonville Jaguars, my second year in the league, was the first time I went into a game with a quote-unquote tackle plan.
Mm-hmm.
All right? Nice. You guys... because they had two different running backs. You had Fred Taylor, who, if I went against Fred Taylor, I had to make sure I tackled him low. He had a knee brace on. He didn't like people going at his legs.
Oh, he was trying to sweep the leg like Karate Kid.
That was the best way. He was
Any
tall.
Means necessary.
Yeah, anything's right. necessary. I had to go at his legs. And, like, that was the plan. Anytime Fred Taylor has the ball, go with his legs. When you had Maurice Jones-Drew get the ball, you better tackle him up high. Kiss him almost. And so
try to,
because he was so short. You tried to go low. That's where his power is. So number one, all right, that was the respect that I had for you. It was the first time I ever had to implement this into my game, is a tackling plan. So would your running style, how would you think it would go, or how would it bode well in today's game where it's more space, it's not so much power downhill, maybe more shotgun runs? How would you think your style of play would transition in today's game?
I think I'll do numbers in today's game. But we all got to think that, right?
Yeah.
I think overall, though, it's
and why would you do numbers?
It's a lot of space.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to give you the business in space. I mean, I understand tempo.
Yeah.
You know, I understand burst. I understand how to make guys miss. I have options. You know, I can run you over. I can run past you. I can shake you. Spin moves. So I had a ton of options.
But how long did it take you to figure all that out?
I agree. That was going
to
be my
follow-up. How long did that take to figure out, you know,
to say,
beat the guy, slow down, get the flow? Like, how did you know that
and
in
a lot
college?
Of people
no, I didn't
say,
learn
like,
that until
running
later.
Back's the easiest transition from college to pro.
I mentioned that last
night. What you're saying is, I don't think it's...
I mentioned that we were talking about Bijan Robinson. The running back is probably the easiest position to transition to the league from a natural raw ability standpoint, but the hardest thing for a back is pass protection.
Correct.
And they won't play.
And
you
why
won't
is
see
that?
The
why
field.
Why is it? Why is pass protection so hard for?
Because
a running
back? You got to understand the different calls. You have to be on point with communicating with the quarterback, the points from the center, and things can change so fast. And they don't necessarily do that as much, you know, in college.
Right.
So the communication has to be there. And then that's one part. Then actually going out there attacking your backer when there is a blitz. Once you put your keys into play and understand rotation and guys that look like they're not coming, but you know they're coming, but you still got to go up there and make the block.
Right.
Because in today's game, the quarterbacks are getting 50 plus million a year.
You got to protect.
You got to protect them. And if you don't protect them, I don't care how great you are of a runner, you can't play because you're a liability.
Right.
So, but I learned those other keys later in my career. I could say the first 5 years of my career, I was just running off natural ability.
Yeah.
I would see the film. I understand the fronts over under where guys were blitzing from. I understood that, but it was all reactionary. But after a few injuries, you know, and just trying to maintain that same level of play, right? And so there wouldn't be a drop off. I had to get smarter and started to really think the game. And that's the part of the game that I miss the most is the preparation for the opponent. People say, hey, you missed the game. I have moments where when I hear a young linebacker, oh, this, oh, that.
Yeah.
I wish I can show him something. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But more than actually going out there to compete, the X's and O's is what I fell in love with. Like, and if I, you know, wasn't there to raise my four boys and, you know, be there for my family, I certainly would be coaching, you know, because I love the X's and O's. And when I watch the game now, I watch it from a situational standpoint, not just that they're dropping back, throwing the ball. They should be doing this. I would be doing this. So I'm actually scripting and running plays in my mind as I would see it based on, you know, the time of the game and the down and distances. And
I'd probably say my first couple years were like yours. I was just young, raw talent, just playing the game and didn't really know about third and one or third and five or third and 10. Like, I'll just
playing it all the same.
I'm just playing it all the same.
Right.
Like,
right.
And then one of my coaches came and he sat me down and it was just like, hey, here's how they're attacking you. You got to know the. And once I understood the game, it was like the Matrix. Like, I could slow everything down.
Right.
I knew what was happening. I knew how you were attacking me. Okay. I don't have to try to just shoot and make it. Well, no, I got my DN right there, so I got outside leverage. I'm just, I'm gonna contain it.
You got time.
Were you like that, or did you just play, or are you?
I did just play a lot, and then all of a sudden, I had a couple really good vet guys and some coaches like just teach me the game.
Yeah, right?
And where it's like, all right, leverage as a secondary player is huge. Know where your help is at.
Yeah,
understanding, like you're talking about, down and distance situations in a football game after a turnover and from 40 to 40. Shot play. It's going to, like, these little things you never think about.
Right.
But you know it's coming.
And the evolution of the game, like I mentioned, the speed of today's game. And I truly believe that it's going to only get faster.
Yeah, it will.
Because where the game is, even you look at something as simple as Madden and what they're doing. I started, you know, with video games, it was like 10-yard fight. I remember that back, and it was like, block moves like that, but now everything's so realistic.
Yeah.
And when you sit down and you talk to these kids on the youth level and the high school level, and you see them out there in 7-on-7, they understand coverages inside out.
Right.
They understand, you know, the jargon, you know, so their knowledge for the game and their IQ levels are so high, which in my opinion, when they adapt that even more, it's just going to continue to, you know, speed this game up.
Yeah, so I know they called you Fragile Freddy. Right. I had my fair share of injuries and elbows and ribs and punctured lungs. I think you tore your ACL. I think my last year, I ended up tearing my ACL like the ninth game of the season. Sat out a couple weeks, played some more, tore my ACL literally the last regular season game in the 2015 season. And for me, I was like, yeah, I'm 34. I ain't really taking on corners, 34 with torn ACLs.
Right.
I think it's time to call it a day. Father time, yeah, you got me. He's undefeated.
Right.
When did you realize it was time to retire?
Oh, man. Just touching on the Fragile Fred part really quick. I just played the game reckless.
Yeah.
You know, I just was reckless. Didn't necessarily... I had a few years of just bad luck, but that was due to my style of play.
Yeah.
And hanging out in, you know, Miami and doing certain things in the off season didn't necessarily help. But, you know, at some point, you know, something turns on. You say, all right, this is what I got to do to take care of myself. And so I had a stretch of really good seasons without injury, without a single injury for that matter, for about 4 years. And the last thing as it relates to that, you know, unsolicited nickname is, you know, to throw it back in their faces. I played for 13 years.
Yeah.
That was when the average is three.
So long.
There has to be some sort of toughness and perseverance and all that good stuff in there. But Peanut, I think the moment I realized that it was time to hang it up for me, after leaving Jacksonville, I went to New England, signed with the Pats, got there, won the starting job both of those years. My first year there, I had a severe high ankle sprain, slowed me down some. So I would sit back like, man, and I want to play. Plus, as I mentioned earlier in the show, I had an agenda. I wanted to win a Super Bowl, which is why I chose the Pats. And the other part was I wanted to push those numbers up and catch up with Jim Brown. Before I got to New England, I was about 1,000 yards shy of passing Jim Brown. None of that happened. My second year there, I had turf toe. And I used to tease people that caught turf toe, right?
So lingering.
Hey. I remember they talked about Dion having turf toe back in the day, and LaDainian, and I was like, turf toe. It's a toe. It's turf toe. So I got turf toe in one foot, one side, and like the very next week, through trying to compensate for this one, I got tackled and I got turf toe in the other one, like back to back weeks, and the second one was very extreme. So I'm in and out, in and out. So that was my 13th year. And as the season's going, you know, it's super cold in New England. And I don't mind the cold.
You're not used to it, though, being a Florida boy, though, right? No,
if you look at my stats, I love the cold.
Okay.
Like from a game, I love the cold, you know, hanging out in the cold. I enjoyed that. Even my 2 years there, living in, down in Providence, I adapted. I embraced it. I really enjoyed it. Because it's some sort of football toughness that comes with it, especially being a Florida boy. You got to show them I can do this. So that's what I did. And
I know.
So I, but there will be practices where, you know, you're out there, you got to do the dog and pony show for the media. And you're like, I know I'm not practicing today, but that's just part of the Patriot way.
Right.
So they don't tip off too much. And everybody's always 50-50, questionable. You don't know who's going to play.
Tom Brady was on the injury list for like years.
Right. So those moments, I would just sit back there and like, man, some of the things I used to do, I don't know if I could do them still, you know, because of the injuries at this point in my career. Now I got to drink, you know, an energy drink on a Fast Friday when before I could just go out there and it's Fast Friday, get excited, you're out of there. But now when you got to rev that engine up beforehand just to make it through, you're like, okay. And then, you know, I started saying, all right, I want to compete on the other side. I wonder what's that's going to be like, you know, that transition. What is that going to be like? So there's a certain intrigue that set in, you know, about the statistics they throw at you in terms of the fail rate of guys making the transition out of the game, the divorce rate of guys making the transition. I said, this is my new competition. You know, I'm not gonna be one of those statistics. So I started to develop this mindset and this excitement, you know, in the intrigue about what is that gonna be like? I don't know, but I wanna attack it head on. So after my 13th season, I was like, lucky 13. 13 is a good number. Mm-hmm. But then that was right along the time that the CBA happened in 2011. They announced the CBA. I was like, all right, I'm going to get back. I'm going to go do another year. Because I was training with a lot of the great young running backs.
That was a lockout year, right?
It was.
Yeah. So I stayed away from training. I forced myself to stay away from training down in South Florida. But we would have Matt Forte, Jones Drew, you know, Frank Gore, a lot of the young great backs And I would go there and I would try to show them up, you know, because we would train together each and every year prior to my retirement. So I was like, if I go train, I know I'll play a 14th season. I know I'll get picked up somewhere eventually and I'll play. So I just purposely stayed away. And then they announced the CBA. I was like, you know what? Maybe I shouldn't retire just yet. So I trained for about a week on my own. And then I was like, nah, I'm gonna give it up. And I just shut it down.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
The wait is over. The Chi is back on Paramount Plus, and the stakes have never been higher. Everything changes on the South Side when a new threat comes to power in the Showtime original series from Emmy winner Lena Waithe. Battle lines will be drawn, alliances will shift, and danger lies around every corner, leaving everyone to wonder who they can trust. Visit ParamountPlus.com/The Chi to get a 50% discount off the Paramount Plus with Showtime annual plan. Offer ends July 14th. Subscription auto-renews. Restrictions apply.
This is Colin Cowherd from The Herd with Colin Cowherd. Angie's List is now Angie, the nation's largest home service marketplace. They're here to help homeowners get all their jobs done well. Angie has helped over 150 million homeowners care for their homes. Whatever your home project, big, small, indoor, outdoor, come to Angie to connect with and hire skilled pros to get the job done well.
Listen, I've got a couple of things in a bathroom in my house. Got to get it fixed. I don't have time, and I'm not good at it. Angie is.
In just a few taps in the Angie app or clicks on the site, you can have Angie tackle your home service projects start to finish. With over 200,000 pros in their network, Angie makes it easy to research, compare, and hire pros to ensure a job done well. With 29 years of experience combined with new digital tools to simplify the process, Angie makes completing home projects really easy. Renters, you can use Angie too for moving, installations, or cleaning. Angie can even help with extremely specific projects. Just tell them what you need, and Angie will find the right solution for you. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I.com. Or download the app today.
So, I mean, you said that this was your next goal or the next thing you were going to attack. Maybe share with us, how was that transition for you when you did finally hang it up? You're not training for it. So many of us, me and Pina, talk about it all the time, and this is what this whole podcast is about. It's about that second act. And so how to, did you have a plan? I know you said you had a goal, but did you have a plan to help you achieve that?
Well, the only plan I had was to not ever stop, you know, never become dormant, stay busy, stay active, keep moving, stay engaged, take advantage of the relationships that that were created over the course of my career, just stay in the face of the people in the NFL. Because for years, I would get opportunities earlier in my career to do, you know, autograph signings or brand opportunities that I would turn down, you know, $5,000, $10,000 opportunities. And that's great money, but, you know, I wanted to be with my family before I had a family, like my mother, brother, sister, and my friends. So I turned down a lot of stuff. Then eventually at a certain point while I was playing, I understood that it's about showing up, you know, and allowing people to understand that they can call on you, that you're gonna show up. And it wasn't about the money, it's just about being there. So that mindset from latter part of my career and then into retirement, I said, I want to maintain that. You know, I want to stick close to the Jaguars, mm-hmm. you know, and take advantage of the hard work and the name and the brand that I built in the local market. So I wanted to get out in front of that, the bad investments that I had. You know, how can I speak, get on the speaking circuit and speak to, you know, the young guys, how to steer clear of these different things. So all the different things, the bad things that I consider, the things I consider bad that happened in my career, mm-hmm. I took those and I sort of formed a mindset that I wanted to use this and be able to use that to help me give back. And you also use that to steer clear and help me direct myself, you know, on the right path by always sharing. So I wanted to get better at investing, you know, so that was intriguing. So I started to study little things. You know, I started to do the opposite of what I would do when people would approach me about investments. For example, I learned just the simple terminology investment talk. Yeah. You know, I just got downloaded Investopedia when that was around. In order to communicate, you got to understand, speaking the definition of words. So if I know I'm going to be in that space, I know I want to continue to invest, you know, in private funds and stocks and all that stuff. Go and teach yourself. So that's what I did. And I also, you know, leveraged the relationships and people to use them to help myself even more there. Created a company, started, created another minority company, and really just started leveraging those relationships to try to build from there. So I've had some better investments, you know, in my second career. Because I don't call it retirement.
Yeah. Right.
I just call it career change.
Yeah, because you're still working.
This is not what retirement is supposed to feel like, or at least what we've been taught that it was supposed to feel like. So it's a career change for me. I'll never retire. I don't think I will. Mm-hmm. But every step, every day is a different intrigue for me. It's a different competition for me. And I embrace that. You know, now doing the pivot with Ryan and Channing, I love our grind. I love our hustle. Just being able to continue to learn from Ryan, you know, someone who actually majored in journalism.
I didn't know that was his major. What? It totally makes a lot of sense, though.
He's great.
It makes a
he
lot of sense.
He is so good at what he does.
How much have you learned from him?
I really, really just because I never really talked a lot.
Yeah. you low key got like a little Morgan Freeman Jr. voice going on.
You know,
like,
people you do love like my sexy voice.
You know, it's low key Morgan Freeman like a little bit.
You know,
I bedtime story.
I love you just leaning to the mic, right?
Yeah. the voiceover bedtime, I'm all for that. But no, just really. I think what I've learned from Ryan, because I still have to be myself. I have to be my authentic self, and that I'm not afraid to be vulnerable.
Mm-hmm. Right? I agree.
And I think that's what creates the safe space on our show. Mm-hmm. And I'm extremely transparent. You know, I want to lead with that. And I try also to be as unbiased as I can. That's the part that I learned from Ryan. Mm-hmm. In order to be in this space, you have to be able to tap into and be unbiased respectfully, mm-hmm. you know, when you engage with the subject, our guests. But I also want to make sure that I give people their flowers, which is, you know, what I do. But Ryan, just being able to study, you know, study beforehand, mm-hmm. not just going in there just talking and slang it. Like, we come in there really prepared. And we do our homework. So learning that from Ryan, the hardest working. I'm like, I don't know how you do it, RC. He has so many different hats that he wears.
He does.
Not just in the media, but with his family. His son Jordan back at ASU. Yeah.
He was coaching all the DBs.
The DBs. So that grind, that hustle, you know, being able to sacrifice when need be, all of that comes into play. Once I actually met Ryan away from the field, because on the field, I wanted to tear him in half when he was a Steeler. But now, you know, we're really good friends. We have the same amount of respect for each other. And we have one agenda, you know, no drama, and just make the Pivot, you know, one of the best podcasts out there.
Well, it's kind of the blueprint, though. Like, you guys are, I mean, I want to be like y'all. When I grew up, I want to be like y'all. We try to set that tone like y'all, and mm-hmm. how y'all ask the questions. And you don't just do athletes. Like, you have everybody on, musicians, athletes, artists.
Right.
Like,
we consider it, lifestyle.
Yeah. And
sports, entertainment. Just a really a safe space.
Yeah.
Where now you have celebrities and their PR teams actually
reaching out
to us, because we're trying to tell a great story, mm-hmm. but we're trying to allow the guests that space and that leverage to tell their stories as they want, and not just how the media, the traditional media,
right,
wants to traject their stories.
I got two questions for you. Number one, how'd you guys come up with the name The Pivot? And then number two, you know, the first time we talked, you talked about this vulnerability mm-hmm. in this safe space when you guys had your show. And the first time,
mm-hmm.
and you talked about the pitfalls and some of the things, the mistakes that you guys made early.
Right.
Could you maybe share with the mistakes you made, and then also what you guys have learned from that and how it's different,
mm-hmm.
and the pivot, and also the name?
Yeah, I think those questions will overlap, yeah. because we can't have the pivot without having the second part, the yeah. second question. So I'll start with the second question and get us back to the pivot. So we started during the pandemic with another podcast, and really just there, we just wanted to talk about, we just wanted to really get out of the house,
yeah.
right? During the pandemic, everybody was home. So
yeah.
we were all neighbors. It started with myself, Reggie Wayne, Brandon Marshall, and Channing Crowder. And we said, all right, let's just go and talk about current events,
yeah.
you know? And we started there. But it took off so fast. It was nothing to do during the pandemic, but people were trying to find everything to do
right.
at yeah. home. So podcast was like perfect, you know,
yeah.
Time to birth the podcast. And it just took off.
It did. It right? really it did.
Super fast.
Well, you guys had all, you had Channing who was talking crazy, Bree Marsh crying
know.
Half the time.
And yeah, like, we did not know that, you know, it was going to do that, but we all had some input.
Right.
And then, you know, Reggie sort of got tied up in his life, you know, and I don't want to go into too much detail there out of respect for everybody involved. But then they inserted Ocho Cinco, which was another, you know, character alongside Channing, but it just made the podcast a little bit more entertaining,
yes.
you know, for everyone that was watching. But again, the business wasn't buttoned up.
Mm-hmm.
No paperwork had necessarily been signed, and there had been some discussions, but as friends who respected each other, we thought we were on the same playing field, and we thought it was one of those things that didn't necessarily have to be communicated.
Yeah.
But then an agenda sort of took over that. When the success showed up, certain agendas kind of showed up.
Yeah.
And then there were, you know, whispers and looking around like, all right, well, this isn't fair. Well, this should have happened. Equity, ownership, revenue sharing, all this stuff started to kind of take shape, and the numbers didn't add up. So Channing and I, we had a conversation, and I would always use the word just, you know, pivot. Just all the time,
mm-hmm.
Just everyday life. You know, I remember hearing a song, Jay-Z had some lyrics. He's like, post and pivot, redistribute, and some other stuff. And I would always just naturally say, man, it's just time to pivot. It's a wrap, you know, it's time mm-hmm. to go, we gotta pivot. So Channing and I, we went and had one big meeting to see if we can come to an agreement mm-hmm. for the old podcast. Didn't necessarily work out. So Channing and I, we went behind the scenes and say, all right, man, what you want to do? What do you want to do? It's like, I don't think this is going to work out for me personally. So much like the end of my career, I kind of sat back and saw some things unfolding that I necessarily wasn't too happy about.
Mm-hmm.
So I just kind of accepted it for about 3 or 4 weeks. in that season three of that old podcast. And I was like, nah, this isn't going to do it. So we went silent. We just went black for a while. Myself, Channing, while they were trying to make their minds up and how they wanted to do stuff, we just went dark. But during that time, we were plotting. So we said, all right, what are we going to do? We got with Alicia Zubakowski, who's our producer mm-hmm. on the podcast, 13-time Emmy award winner. She's a monster at what she does. We got on the phone with RC. He said he was down. We formed our team, and we said the one thing we're going to do is get the business right first.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Structure from the pivot, the company, to our own entity amongst the talent and how it was going to pay out, the distributions, just everything. We right, shaped right. up. We got with the account. We just shaped up. And the last thing was, what's the name? What are we going to name it? And we just, you know, one day I said, let's just call it, how about The Pivot? Because that's what Channing and I, that's what we're doing. Mm-hmm. We're about to pivot.
Yeah.
And that's what everybody in the pandemic was doing. We all had to pivot.
Everybody was.
You know, and there are going to always be moments in all of our lives where everybody at some point is going to have to pivot. And there'll be pivotal moments that create good and bad times. So it just stuck. And we went and trademarked our stuff and, you know, made sure that part of it was solid. And the rest is history.
Well, I'm a fan.
I'm a big fan.
Appreciate it.
I watch it often.
Appreciate
it. It's good. I like what y'all doing. Y'all definitely setting the tone.
Trying to get it right, positive way.
What are you guys hoping to accomplish with it? And when it's all said and done, you like, you know what? This was a success. Or do you not even have that? You guys got over 700,000 subscribers. Mm-hmm. And so you are at the top, well, one of the top podcasts that the nation even has. Mm-hmm. And so when would you say, all right, this is what we were trying to accomplish? Or did you guys even set up the goal? Because you did everything else.
We surprise ourselves a lot of the times. We just talked about it last night, you know, with the YouTube NFL Sunday Ticket thing. Mm-hmm. Like, we were like, whoa, that's a big partnership, you know, for us to achieve. But yeah, I think long term, obviously, you know, we want to be able to have our content, you know, where it's licensed and, mm-hmm. you know, now we're being paid for it. Even, you know, 15, 20 years from now. Mm-hmm. But we look at models like The Breakfast Club, you know, and the consistency and the sustainability. And we want to achieve that first. We want to maintain our consistency. And as long as we do that, everything else is going to take care of itself.
Yeah.
I think where people mess up is when they take too many breaks and then there's some uncertainty and, you know, then your fans don't know what you're going to do. And we said that's not what we're gonna do. So consistency is the first thing that'll help create the sustainability and keep us there for the years to come. We're independent now. We've had some offers, you know, here and there from some of the bigger, you know, companies that are eventually going towards, you know, podcast platforms and stuff. When those numbers, you know, come in the right way and certain it aligns with certain partnerships, then that'll be the right moment where we're able to carve off, you know, a piece of our ownership, you know, for partnership and then maintain some ownership, but always really just controlling complete ownership of the pivot and licensing our shows to go forward because they're going to live on the internet forever.
Yeah, once
it's gonna always be valuable information. But long term, we just wanna make sure that we're giving back. Like we don't have a complete business agenda to just dump it and run with money. We wanna keep servicing the people because people make podcasts.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
That's like the thing
that's
now.
What we believe in.
Yeah.
People, the viewers, you know, subscribers, however, they make podcasts. If they don't sit there and tune in and listen, you're irrelevant.
Correct.
So we want to make sure we're servicing them. That's always our first mindset, that we want to do good conversation, good content, you have certain guests that are going to spike your numbers, and that's cool, but it's not always about that.
Right.
And I tried to explain that on the other podcast, that it's about building bridges.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right? And just having dope, super dope conversations and content. You don't always need an A-lister as a guest.
Right.
You just need great conversation.
I'm with that. So we gonna pivot, switch to another topic, right? Right. We gonna ask you some quick hitter questions real quick. Okay. Rookie year, get that contract, you sign. Probably, I know for me, I bought a nice little, I had some rims, you know what I'm saying? I had that speaker, I had the screens falling from the ceiling, I had the screen in the river, you know, single, no kids. So all my money went into my
Fred
car.
Fred T from Florida, you know he had that.
He has to tell me though, like what was one of the first things you splurged on?
Oh man, all right. So the first thing I splurged on after I got my contract was I bought my grandmother a $150,000 house.
Okay.
Because my promise to her, when I was around a sophomore in high school, didn't know how I was going to do it, but I told her I was going to buy her home.
Okay.
We were in a 2-bedroom apartment. She raised, you know, me and my other 4 siblings. So I said, baby, I'm going to buy your house. So that was the first major thing that I bought. And then after I got her secured, I blew some money on some jewelry, some rims, you know, a Benz or two. Stuff that I look back on now.
And it's just like you know, so dumb. This doesn't like, make sense. What was I doing? Yeah.
You know what? I mean, I know it doesn't make sense because it's a lot of dollars. But at the end of the day, man, it's what young people do.
Like, that's true. But like, that's also a part of where we come in.
Right.
As guys that have been there, yeah. You know, to try to. I know the money's different because I was a 9th pick in 98. And I think my total contract package was around $16 million. With a total to be able to go up to around 20 with incentives, and these guys are getting that year in a year, but they're exposed to so much more, right? And but I think they're also exposed to having a lot of good people around them that can tell them not to make certain frivolous, you know, purchases and decisions that are in you know in a year, 2 years from now, you're not gonna like it won't even be around.
Did you have someone? When you were making those purchases, help you out, or it was just like, no, this is what I'm doing.
They helped me write the check. They didn't say, hey, you shouldn't do that. Now, you know, but that's another thing. Like,
yeah.
You know, learning from those things. You know, they are good, great financial advisors, and there are ones that are, you know, predatory, right? Mm-hmm. And aren't great. So I believe my message. Whether it's this platform, our platform on the Pivot, or just speaking engagements, or seeing these young guys like at the draft at different places, be smart with your money. Yes. It's a constant reminder, like don't make certain you're gonna have fun.
Yes, for
but
sure.
But everything can be calculated. Make sure you keep the main thing. Learn how to take your interest or shoe deals or. You know, appearance monies and stuff. And if you want to go crazy with that, you can kind of, you know, justify certain means by with that. But create a plan, you know, whatever that plan looks like, create a plan. But I think it's our duty, you know, as vets, guys that have been around, guys that have made those mistakes, because we can look back on them and say, ah, it was fun.
So stupid.
But it was stupid,
oh, so
right? It's unnecessary. I think at one point I had maybe 5 cars in my driveway. There's only one me. But then I got buddies. Hey, take this.
Yeah.
You know, yeah.
It's funny because at some point, most guys that had an extended career or grew up in a certain way, like that is what we wanted. Like I remember the Trick Daddy video where I wanted a donk. Like that's all I wanted. And I had to have rims and I wanted this on. But that
I got
was
one at the end of my career. Towards the middle of my career, I got because I always wanted one.
Yeah.
And I mean, I probably put $75,000 in that car.
Mm-hmm.
Old school, had the best of everything in it.
The
guys loved it. The engine, 502, big block. The guys on the team, they loved it. And I only pulled it out on game day. The other days during the week, it probably didn't even crank. It probably didn't even start. And I smelled fumes all down the street. It parked in my garage. My wife was like, we got to get rid of that. You know, and I ended up selling it to a teammate for like $40,000. So I took a $35,000 haircut. And he sold it probably 4 months after that for like 25. I should have sold it back to me. But yeah, just a lot of.
Do you have an old school right now currently?
Of course not. Of course not. Okay. So I have.
I would not have guessed that.
I would not have guessed that either.
You know what? No, I do not have an old school. It's actually, it's one old school in my garage, and I've been trying to get rid of it for years. It's a 2008 CL550. It was only like five of them ever made. Beautiful interior. It's like this deep hunter green.
Okay.
I bought it for my wife back then. I bought it for her. She's a St. Patrick's Day baby. So okay. Her favorite color is green. Green, March 17th, green, everything. She will not let me get rid of that. I've been trying to get rid of that car for like, hey, you need to get rid of it. But the good thing is it's been paid off.
Yep.
It's a 08. It only has like 50,000 miles. So it's perfect condition, right? Mm-hmm. From the outside, no dings. It's perfect. I'm just tired of looking at it. But the blessing in disguise is our older son, he's 20 now, and we have a 17-year-old. They can drive it, and they drive it to work and this and that. So it's not as bad. And then I don't have to cut a check to pay for them a car because they like driving a Benz still. That's the one old school that's in the garage.
All right. Well, I'm just glad we all can openly admit that we all have purchased rims and old schools.
My God. I had those spree wells, the rims.
Spinners?
Oh, my God, the spinners. Yeah.
If rims ain't coming on the car now, like they come standard on certain
vehicles, they do.
Like we have a Range Rover. If it doesn't come on, I ain't buying them.
I'm with you.
Like I'll purchase some stock from the dealership.
Well, they take care of them better.
Right. But if I'm not going to a person to buy 23, 20. I'm not doing that anymore.
Yeah, same.
But if I can get some stuff, I'll even get a car. I've gotten cars over the years where I'll just take the vehicle in there and I'll get them factory coated.
That's what I do now. Yeah, like, powder coat them black.
Powder coat them like
yeah, it's factory rim. Yeah,
I don't care to be seen. I prefer not to be seen. Throw some tint on my car. Make them illegal. Make the tint.
Gotta have an illegal tint.
But I'm gonna go to my dermatologist and. I'll teach y'all that.
Yeah.
Another point.
Don't give away all the
secrets. We're in Florida. You know, I got some skin condition. I got to have a dark tint. So work with me here just in case I get pulled over due to my tint. But I don't want to be seen in the vehicle. Like, I don't care about that sort of stuff. And it's just, you know, all superficial stuff.
So
sorry. All right, but let me hit you with a hard question, man. All right. Top five running backs of all time, your list.
Oh, boy. This thing changes all the time.
We keep pivoting. That's what it's about.
It changes so much. I fell in love with the game watching Walter Payton.
Mm.
Love sweetness.
I would say Jim Brown.
Totally get it.
I love Marcus Allen.
Okay. Mm. I wouldn't expect it.
I wouldn't either.
Yeah, I love Marshall Faulk.
I love that one.
And LaDainian Tomlinson.
Really?
It's my guys. But... And I do this, and it's no particular order. Those are the guys that I absolutely love. But Sweetness, Jim Brown, Barry Sanders, Marcus Allen, and Marshall Faulk, those are my guys. Yeah. I just love LaDainian's game, just his all-around ability. You know, Faulk, I felt like in my career I wasn't the receiver that he was, but in terms of, you know, that and that, I was a bigger bat. Faster bat, you know. But yeah, those are the guys that I admire. And I believe, in my opinion, those are my favorites.
Follow up. How about in today's game? Who are like your top or favorite running backs to watch in today's game?
All right. Saquon. I just love his explosiveness. He's extremely dynamic, strong. He has probably the best jump cut in the game.
Yeah, yeah.
I agree. He get from A gap to C gap like that and gets back vertical. He wastes no time lateral. I like Christian McCaffrey. He's that Falk version.
Yeah, he is.
You know, so he gets it done. I like Jonathan Taylor over in Indy.
Yeah.
You know, when I see that 28 and the Taylor running down the field, kind of bring back some memories.
Flashbacks.
Right. I like Alvin Kamara.
Mm-hmm.
You know, AK he's a dog. And I admire a lot of the young the young running back. I like my Florida boy, Derrick Henry. You know, he's a different.
They don't build him like him.
They don't build him like him. He's Eddie George.
It's great.
You know, yoked up. Eddie George 3.0.
I saw him this morning when he was leaving. Eddie George still swole.
Eddie looks good.
Oh, yeah. My goodness.
Eddie, like, he can still give you 20 carries.
Yeah. So, I admire so many of the young backs out there, man, just how great they are and how versatile they are. They can do it all.
Yeah.
You know, but it starts again with where youth sports is and how that's continuing to evolve from flag, you know, and then 7-on-7. You know, and now is developing these guys how to be great receivers.
Yep.
You know, how to have that, how to be extremely agile. Then they carry it over to, you know, the running back position and just really being able to think the game, line up the X's and O's. I think those things are going to be what separate the greats, the guys that are going to be future Hall of Famers at that position versus the guys that are going to be really good at that position. That high level IQ and how they see the X's and O's. I don't think it'll be too many more 10,000 yard rushers because of how the game has evolved. It's more of a pass dominant game now.
And they devalue running backs, so nobody.
And the running back position isn't valued as great. Mm-hmm. There are some that force the issue there, sure. Right? But those are the special guys. But I think that. You won't see as many 10,000 yard rushers because they're splitting carries,
right?
Two headed monsters and stuff like that. So those opportunities won't present themselves. Doesn't mean they're not great from an ability standpoint. It's just from the opportunities, I don't think they'll get as many opportunities.
Yeah. So another pivot, another serious question. Our journeys require great guides, and through my journey of life, I've had numerous guys that have helped me along the way. And if you could have your Mount Rushmore of guides or people that have helped you to get to where you are right now, who would those people be?
Four.
And you get four of them.
All right. Now, I would definitely start with my grandmother first, man. Just to see what she had gone through to raise us. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if I can get to the other three, because I'm fighting back tears just thinking about her. Y'all wrong for that.
It's all good, man.
My grandmother first, and then my dad. You know, he came into my life later. But he was sort of forced out of my life early on. Mm-hmm. But he came back into my life later, and he did what dads are supposed to do. Mm-hmm. And he helped me become, you know, a better person from a brotherly approach. And then just a, you know, couple mentors, Coach Pola, you know, my running backs coach, who I got towards the end of my career. Just his fatherly approach, how he kept me on track, and how he, you know, continued to reinforce things that were most important. And lastly, I would just say my daughter, Natasha, because she was the one who initially broke me from, you know, all of the knuckleheaded stuff you would do and the decisions you would make without thinking. My first baby girl, she made me a man.
Yeah.
Right. And just really all of those, you know, people as a collective, and I've never thought of it that way.
Yeah.
But now, since y'all put me on the spot, those people that have been the most influential and helped me pivot and become the person that I am today. So,
Well, Fred, man, I appreciate that vulnerability, bro.
Yeah.
And I can attest to the last statement, your daughter, your firstborn. I'll never forget, I was doing a lot of the same knuckleheaded stuff
when I first met Peanut
at
PAO. And my girlfriend, who's now my wife at the time, she asked me a really, really hard question, was that, would you want your daughter to date you? And that really hurt, because it really makes you look at that man in the mirror and say, I really need to like focus on what I'm trying to do and who I'm trying to represent. And the people you love are the ones that you can hurt the most. Yeah. And so it's really cool. I appreciate you being candid and vulnerable and sharing that too.
Yeah, I want to also really quick before I get kicked out of my own house, man. We're going to do a Mount Rushmore plus one.
Let's do it.
My wife will kill
Let's
me.
Do it.
Because, you know, I think about in that moment, you know, I really, everything that I lead with, from getting out of, you know, the hanging out mode in Miami and making sure I would take care of my body and not going clubbing all the time and stuff, it was her.
Like, yeah.
My wife pretty much changed, you know, as a single person, changed the direction of my career.
Yeah.
Because I would hang out, like I said, in the off season all the time. And, you know, she was, you know, saying, look, this is what you're going to have to do in order to, you know, if you want to be great. So this is what you're going to have to do. So a hard relationship. You know, we've been together for 20 plus years. But she's the one who helped me pivot and get back on the path that I thought I could be on as a player, but it also made me a better person, made me a responsible person.
Yeah.
So yeah, so she, for lack of a, I guess pun intended, she took me out of the streets. but from hanging out and learning structure and just really just developing, you know, sort of a guideline for my life.
Yeah.
So she deserves as much credit as the other four.
That's also why you're not getting rid of that Benz.
Yeah. I want to get rid of that car so bad, man. That's crazy.
Oh man, well, hey.
Hey, next time, y'all gotta have some napkins close by. I could have dabbed that away, bro.
That was my Oprah moment. That was my Oprah. It was beautiful though, man.
No, you can't hide true emotion.
No, it's beautiful.
Because I think about her, man, and she's battling dementia, and to see her, like, that's, you know, that's heavy on me.
Yeah, for sure.
Hey, appreciate you for coming out, man. Thank you.
My pleasure, appreciate y'all.
Thank you guys for listening. You know, with every show we do and every guest we have, we try to make it very authentic and just be vulnerable and open and secure and make this a safe place for these guys to talk. And you guys have been awesome for supporting us. We can't thank you enough.
We are here to educate and entertain. So make sure, like always, and I always ask you, make sure you hit the subscribe button, give us a 5-star rating, tell a friend to tell a friend to do what, Peanut?
Tell a friend.
Make sure anywhere you get your podcast, whether it's Apple or iHeart, link in.
Appreciate y'all. Give us a listen. Hit that button. Click it.
I think he needs to stop now.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring body wash and bar soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
The wait is over. The Chi is back on Paramount Plus, and the stakes have never been higher. Everything changes on the South Side when a new threat comes to power in the Showtime original series from Emmy winner Lena Waithe. Battle lines will be drawn,
alliances will shift, and danger lies around every corner, leaving everyone to wonder who they can trust. Visit ParamountPlus.com/TheShot to get a 50% discount off the Paramount Plus with Showtime annual plan. Offer ends July 14th. Subscription auto-renews. Restrictions apply.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.